Today on Seculo, another Biden failure. Al-Qaeda's Afghanistan resurgence.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo.
I do think that one would believe if the leader of Al-Qaeda is not in a cave or hiding out in the mountains of Pakistan, that he's on the balcony in the capital, that Al-Qaeda feels pretty good about their presence in that country, and there's more than just one guy.
I'd actually throw that back a little bit, Brian. I don't think they're feeling too good about being in Afghanistan right now.
We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110.
If they were worried about it, they'd be in they'd be hiding in Pakistan where we couldn't even find them.
I don't think that Al-Qaeda can look at what happened over the last 48 hours and feel like Afghanistan is going to be much of a safe haven for them. We have proven that over-the-horizon counterterrorism capability works. Right. We did it to a fairly well in the last 48 hours, and we're going to stand by and be ready and vigilant if we have to do it again.
And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, right off the bat, I want to say congratulations to our intelligence community, CIA, which led this effort to take out the leader of Al-Qaeda, who was a 9/11 mastermind. I'm glad he's dead. He deserved to be dead. He's got the blood of thousands upon thousands of Americans on his hands. But it is concerning about where he was killed. You cannot take out. I mean, the fact that it's from people like Lindsey Graham to Lisa Murkowski, everyone is questioning. Everyone's grateful that the CIA was able to do this work. And I agree with President Biden that when we have these enemies like this, we hunt you down until you are dead. It doesn't matter how long from the event. But the fact that he was back in the capital of Afghanistan in a senior Taliban leader's home, gathered with his family outside on a porch. This is a guy who for most of his life has been had to hide in a cave somewhere between Afghanistan and Pakistan, and he felt comfortable enough in Taliban-controlled Afghanistan to not just have movements around the city, but to actually move back to the capital and hang out on the porch. Now, he is gone, and he's gone using the same similar weapon under the Trump administration that was used to kill Soleimani, and that is the flying Ginzu, which, again, doesn't have a warhead, splits out into mini blades, and you are no longer. Now, I just think what we have to be important about here, I'll take your calls on 1-800-684-3110. I am not against the Biden administration taking out al-Zahiri. I'm supportive of the CIA. The problem is that the narrative it shows is that we didn't take him out in some cave somewhere or in some small province. It's that the Taliban is back to being the Taliban. And Andy, I think that's the top issue here. And what we're hearing, the concern from Lindsey Graham, we're going to talk to Rick Rennell about it, from Mike McCall, is that Al-Qaeda is not gone from Afghanistan, as President Biden claimed, and that the leaders of Al-Qaeda feel like they could probably reconstitute, thought that they could reconstitute. The question is now, can you keep taking out their leadership or not, I guess?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think Senator Graham is concerned. It's correct when he said, what unnerves me is that al-Zawahiri felt comfortable enough being out in the open in Kabul after the Taliban takeover, so much for the Taliban rejecting al-Qaeda, which is the point that you made. I mean, if you're in such a prominent position back in your family's home, back sitting on the balcony, don't tell me that the Taliban didn't know he was there. They obviously knew that he was there, that he was flourishing, and that he was in the community, and that he was hiding or doing additional terrorist work, which is used to be a surgeon, an interesting thing, but is continuing to do the work that he is really cut out to do, and that's being a terrorist. So it does seem to me that the great victory that the president is touting is somewhat tempered by the fact that they are, that Al-Qaeda and the Taliban are still working together.
I mean, go ahead. Logan, you did a full series on the Taliban, Revenge of the Taliban. Tell people about that because I want to make sure they can find it too.
Yeah, you should watch that. We really talked a lot about actually the Al-Qaeda, the end of Al-Qaeda and the resurgence of Al-Qaeda. Within it, it is called Revenge of the Taliban. It's available on our YouTube channel, or specifically just go to aclj.org/Taliban. Scroll down. We just put up the playlist. It has a lot of great guests, Tulsi Gabbard, Rick Grinnell. People from our own team are on it. And it really goes a deep dive into the history of not only the Taliban, but of the war on terror. And then what we said almost a year ago, what the future would be. And it seems like it's coming true. So it's pretty crazy to actually see a year later a lot of these predictions happening. Again, that's at aclj.org/Taliban.
withdrawal from Afghanistan was a disaster. It led to the death of U.S. troops, leaving people behind. It has been a mess, and we knew that the Taliban, one, was, again, not a partner you can work with or trust, but now, two, we see that they are providing a safe haven, not just to some random al-Qaeda members, by the way, to the number one leader of al-Qaeda since 2011 when Osama bin Laden was killed. Al-Zahiri takes over, and he feels comfortable enough in a Taliban-controlled Kabul after the U.S. withdrawal to waltz back into the capital city to reunite with his family, as President Biden said in kind of a bizarre way. Like who cares about this guy? He's evil.
He says things in bizarre ways.
Yes, he does. Just, but then he's on a porch. So this is not like he hid out in some underground bunker in Kabul. He was in a normal place, a place where this special weapon could even get to him, which means he was outside, like Soleimani. Listen, our intel people did a great job. Bigger picture intel, though, bigger picture strategy, huge failure. The fact that he was even there. The fact that he was there immediately after the U.S. withdraws, and he's the leader of al-Qaeda, reconstituting al-Qaeda, because what do we now know? And this scares me for the future. That you've got the Taliban providing a safe haven to terrorists who want to kill Americans and ultimately carry out terror attacks here in the United States. And I thought, honestly, because of the work of President Trump, because of the President Obama taking out bin Laden, Trump taking out the head of ISIS and also really getting rid of them, and they were kind of overtook al-Qaeda. And really, that Islamic radical terrorism was not the number one threat my kids were going to have to worry about. Right. Here you go again. Because you see this 20, 30-year cycle in Afghanistan. The Russians leave. Taliban turned the Mujahideen turned into the Taliban. Taliban starts providing safe haven to terror groups. And number one goal, not Israel, us. These are groups that is their number one goal is to take out Americans. And Logan, you've gotten into it with people that people trust, or really a whole host of individuals on how 9/11 and the Taliban, the threat from al-Qaeda, changed everything.
Yeah, we'll play some clips because this is from a specialty series. We did a 10 episodes, like 5 hours long, if you want to go watch it, series that you can binge through. It's available, like I said, on YouTube or on ACLJ.org/Taliban. It'll take you directly there. We had some great guests. Again, we had people like people you've heard on this show before, Rick Grinnell, Wes Smith, but then Mike Pompeo, Representative Waltz, James Lankford, John Ashcroft, Attorney General. We go way back and talk about the history of the war on terror. Nikki Haley, obviously you and our dad, Jay Sekulow, and Tulsi Gabbard. So you can go take a look at that whole series. But we talked a little bit about the destruction and then the resurgence of not just the Taliban, because that was obviously what we were talking about a year ago when all of this started happening. We're almost right at probably a year since the Taliban or since the Afghanistan withdrawal happened sometime in early August. But we are able to talk a little bit also about specifically al-Qaeda. So here's a couple clips from there. This is Nikki Haley. Why would you think this would be a mistake for the U.S. and the U.N. to recognize the Taliban as a legitimate government?
Well, the U.S. should not ever want to work with the Taliban because the Taliban is the one that allowed al-Qaeda to make its moves on 9/11 and have over 3,000 people die because of it. When you look at these terrorist groups, they all stick together and you can't take their word for it. And I think we see that. We see that in the fact that women are no longer allowed to work in government. They've taken girls out of schools. They're doing forced marriages again. They've got dead bodies hanging in the streets to show what will happen if you don't listen to them. That's not a government we should ever want to recognize. And it's certainly not a government that you want to give money to. And when they talk about recognition at the UN, what that means is aid to the Taliban. So we don't want to give aid to the Taliban. That's just not an option that we should ever have on the table. And we should never think it's about working with the Taliban. We couldn't work with them before. We can't work with them now. It's never going to be an option. So we've got to figure out another way to get hold of this and figure out how we're going to get a fighting force there that's not Americans necessarily, but to find out an allied contingency that we can go to start getting a hold of the terrorist movements that are happening. Yeah.
And these are long form interviews that happen. You can watch all of them almost in their entirety, available again on our website at aclj.org/Taliban. That was with Nikki Haley. There's a lot of other clips we're going to play throughout.
Yeah. I mean, I don't often cite Lisa Murkowski is, you know, one of my favorite Republicans by far not. But she wrote this, tweeted this out immediately. This is why, I mean, the immediate reaction was proud of our intel guys for, you know, hunting these guys down. But this is scary. She said, we need to discuss what al-Zahiri's presence there means about Afghanistan. Think about this again. And what we must do to keep it from becoming a full-scale terrorist haven. My concern, Andy, is that while we can take these guys out, I think it already is a full-scale terrorist haven. It's controlled by the Taliban. For goodness sakes, we know they're terrorists too.
They didn't change. They didn't alter. They're not different. They are what they are. And the supposition and the belief on the part of the Biden administration that you can reset in Afghanistan with the Taliban now in control and that disastrous withdrawal having been put behind us and reset with them and they're not a haven is ridiculous. The idea that al-Zawahiri can be in the midst of them sitting on his balcony is known to the Taliban leadership, known to the senior aides. I mean, the idea that they are somehow changed or altered or that they have now seen the light and they can live in a civilized society in a civilized fashion is ridiculous. And I agree with you, Lisa Murkowski, not my favorite Republican, not a person you can really lean on, but she was right in this respect.
Yeah, I mean, Lindsey Graham said, what a brazen show of alliance. He's already called it that, an alliance between al-Qaeda and the Taliban. You know, the U.S. State Department position, our Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, said the Taliban, quote, grossly violated the Doha Agreement by hosting and sheltering al-Qaeda's top leader. Yeah, because you can't make agreements with the Taliban. You can come up with, in the moment, if you got to deal with issues, that's one thing. But long term is we should be taking out their leaders, too. I mean, I don't know why we let them thrive. Why not take out all the Taliban leaders? We know, al-Zahiri is in there in the Taliban leader's house. That's who housed the head of al-Qaeda. He said, come to my home in Kabul. I'm so unconcerned about you getting my family, hurt that you can come live in my place and come reunite with your family. And great job, CIA. Great job, U.S. Intel. But wow, what a change. Logan, and I mean, it changed. I'm not even sure. The ridge of the Taliban. That's what everyone was worried about. Is we leave, they're back.
And we talked about that a lot in the special, and how all of this started really with the combination of Al Qaeda and the Taliban coming together, and that's where 9/11 occurred. And it eventually will resurge, and that's what we were concerned about, and that's what happened. Let's take a clip and a watch clip with this Tulsi Gabbard really talking about this specifically, and again. Predicting the future. This was done last fall. So take a listen to this again from a clip from Revenge of the Taliban, available now.
Initially, we went to Afghanistan. Our special operations forces were sent there to go after and defeat al-Qaeda, which they did effectively and decisively and quickly. And instead of staying focused on that mission of both militarily and ideologically defeating this Islamist jihadist threat and terrorist groups like al-Qaeda and so on, our leaders got distracted. And they set us on this other path towards overthrowing secular dictators and follow-on nation-building missions. And we've seen this in Iraq, we've seen this in Libya, we've seen this in Syria, and we've seen this happen over successive Democrat and Republican administrations. Now, this has come at a great cost to us, the American people. The results and the consequences of this is al-Qaeda is stronger today than they were before they attacked us on 9/11. We've seen countless lives lost, American lives and the lives of people in these countries, trillions of American taxpayer dollars spent. We've seen how Christians and religious minorities in many of these countries who were previously protected have either been killed or driven out because of this Islamist jihadist threat. And the list goes on and on. What we've seen play out in Afghanistan recently is the latest consequence of failed leadership.
So, Logan, I want people to know this is all available for free.
Yep.
These are names, too, like they know, like Tulsi Gabbard. Rick Grenell is going to be joining us next segment. Part of it.
It's the first episode. You can watch that one.
And then, again, it's all available. Tell people where to go.
Yeah, it's on ACLJ.org/Taliban, or if you're on YouTube right now, you can find there's a playlist that has all of them together, and you can just sit through and watch them or pick the ones you want to watch. Thousands of people have already. It's well done. It's a beautiful score. It is great B-roll. So it's not just like podcast format or audio format. It really was made for video, so it looks really good. It's a really interesting discussion. We talk again about the origins of War on Terror. We talk about the formation of the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, and even the Patriot Act, which I know is controversial. We discuss that and how that was utilized. And it's a very interesting look holistically at the entire Afghanistan withdrawal and predicting the future, which now has occurred, which is that the Al-Qaeda heads were being housed there in Afghanistan. So pretty wild to watch that actually unfold.
Folks, when we come back, Rick Grinnell's going to be joining us. So you've got questions about this and what's happening in Afghanistan for him as the acting director of national intelligence. Give us a call. 1-800-684-3110. We'll put you on the phone. We'll put you on with Rick at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Right back on Secular. All right, welcome back to Secular. I want to do a little bit of flashback. Rick Grinnell's joining us now. This is President Biden. Just about a year ago, not too much longer than that, last August. Take a listen.
What interest do we have in Afghanistan at this point with Al-Qaeda gone? We went to Afghanistan for the express purpose of getting rid of Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, as well as getting Osama bin Laden. And we did.
Well, the problem is we didn't get rid of Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan specifically. Their leadership decided it was a safe enough place to go hang out and live in the capital, whereas President Biden said reunite with his family. And it's senior Taliban officials, by the way, home. I want to go to Rick Grinnell. Rick, obviously, it's great work by our intel community to continue to track Zawahiri down. He thought he was in a place where he could kind of reemerge and feel safe. He shows up in Kabul. But what it really tells me is that while we took advantage of him thinking that I'm finally in a safe place, that he is, in a sense, the Al-Qaeda leaders are in a safe haven, and they will learn from this, hey, maybe we can't be on the balcony, but we certainly have allies in the Taliban who are going to put us up in their homes and let us operate. And it's exactly what the Al-Qaeda is looking for, is how to start planning more attacks. They need a place to do it.
Let's be clear on what this was. An Al-Qaeda terrorist was the guest of a cabinet member in Afghanistan. This is sad. This is outrageous. Think of all of the people in the United States, taxpayers, our soldiers who've been on the front lines. Think of all of the sacrifices that Americans have made over the 20 years of trying to do something good in Afghanistan. And yet Joe Biden evacuated us out in a reckless way. And we clearly see now that those 20 years of trying to do some good was wiped out because of the fleeing that Joe Biden did. Politicians undercut American servicemen, American taxpayers. It's so outrageous to see what's happening. And I have to say that, you know, Joe Biden being proud that he got 90% of Americans out, leaving 10% behind, is perhaps one of the reasons why he's got the lowest popularity of any president in the history of polling.
Yeah, and Rick, I would think that this is going to, again, they're going to try to use this politically, obviously. But the bigger picture is, yes, great intel. We got Zawahiri. But the fact that he was back in the capital city, that he's no longer hiding out, that he's not in some cave, that he's that public, and you got to imagine how many more other Zawahiris are. I mean, they're already talking about who's next in the Al-Qaeda leadership, and like I said earlier, you know, it kind of felt like we had made some huge gains against radical Islamic terrorism to a point where it was not our top fear all the time in our own country as Americans, when we were used to that rash of attacks and ISIS-inspired attacks. And I worry that this kind of safe place for these bad actors is exactly how we get to that. May not be today, but maybe a few years down the road, because they get a place where they have allies that have a government structure and they can plan.
Look, under the Trump administration, we had Al-Qaeda on the run. We have terrorists on the run. And in the Biden administration, you have Al-Qaeda literally coming back as guests of the Afghanistan government. They are flaunting this comeback. They are coming out and signaling to us that they are back and they are in a safe haven and they're celebrating and they're guests. We are responding to them really flaunting their ability to have a safe haven. And so this should not be celebrated in any way. It should be a red flag to what is coming when they are deciding to come out and flaunt the fact that they can have a safe haven, they have a country that gives them aid and comfort, then it's only a matter of time before they make another attack. They're planning it right now, and they have safe space to do it, and their network is reconstituting, and this is a disaster for America. Mark my words, we are going to have an attack because Joe Biden does not know how to be a leader and crush the terrorists. His weak policies have welcomed them back.
Yeah, scary stuff. I want to switch just a second to Taiwan. So Nancy Pelosi's touchdown. We saw a lot of military action by the Chinese, but ultimately here, is this a loss for the Chinese that they weren't able to scare her off, even using the Biden administration, or do you think it just all got so muddled up by the end? What's kind of your take?
Look, we have to get to the position where we recognize that we have to have good relations with China. Shouldn't be sticking them in the eye. But right now, it's a crisis. They have been allowed to take over our universities. They've been allowed to spy on us recklessly. We have bad policies when it comes to the supply chain being in China and us beholden to that supply chain. We've got to fix these policy problems. But we also have to recognize that, like Donald Trump showed us, you can be very tough. You can put tariffs on the Chinese. You can demand that they have better behavior. But we don't need to be sticking them in the eye. We don't need to be creating enemies. And I think that there's a way that we can stick up for America without trying to cause wars and conflicts.
Finally, it's a big primary day. There's more this week. Where would people, if people are watching tonight, what races are you watching, Rick?
Well, I'm in Arizona right now, Jordan. Working hard for the four Trump-endorsed statewide candidates in Arizona, Carrie Lake, Blake Masters, Abe Hamadeh. These are individuals who earned President Trump's endorsement, and I think it's really important that we get out and vote. So I'm here in Arizona. Hopefully we have a big celebration tonight. I'm watching the Michigan races as well, Missouri. Jesse Jensen in Seattle suburbs is running. I really like Jesse. He's a friend of mine. So I'm watching that race closely as well.
Awesome. Well, Rick, as always, it's great to have you. Thanks for being able to hop back on with us today after this news last night. And again, I think it is, Andy, what concerns me here. You know, we hear from Rick. He's the head of the director at National. I mean, he knows the layout and the fact that this happened so quickly. I mean, just within a year, the head of Al-Qaeda is waltzing back into the Capitol. Yes, our guys got him, great. But how many other guys that are not names that we know of because 9/11 was a long time ago that are reconstituting as we speak and using a gigantic Afghanistan with lots of places to hide as a safe haven?
Lots, and they're there. And don't think that they're not there. They are there. They're hiding in all sorts of places. Operatives of Al-Qaeda have found a refuge with the Taliban in Afghanistan, and to deny that is ridiculous. Again, I applaud military intelligence. I applaud the United States military efforts, but it really belies the fact that we have miscalculated, and this administration has miscalculated the fact that Al-Qaeda and the Taliban are one and the same and are working together and are going to continue to work together. And all the sacrifices that we made in Afghanistan may have been for naught.
All right, folks, we come back and update on some of these elections that are going on and votes. There's a huge life vote tomorrow in Kansas as well. So we're going to update you on that. Some of the other work the ACLJ is doing on life as well. As always, you can support us at aclj.org. We'll be right back.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at ACLJ.org.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, welcome back to Seculo. We are taking your phone calls too at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. In the second half hour, we'll take your calls on Zawahiri. We'll take your calls on what do you think at this point? Now you've heard kind of our discussion. How concerned are you about the U.S. again having to deal with this like top threat on all of our minds of radical Islamic terrorism and trying to strike inside the U.S. They are obviously reconstituting, using Afghanistan to do that as a safe haven. It's great that we took out their leader, al-Zahiri, who has been the leader since bin Laden was killed a decade ago. But he felt brazen enough to head to the capital of Afghanistan and be on a porch outside. So obviously he was being tracked. But and guess whose porch it was? As Rick said, a member of the Afghanistan of the Taliban government's cabinet. So you have a direct link there between high-ranking Taliban officials and the top leader of al-Qaeda. So do you believe that because of the actions of the Biden administration, because again, this one, I get to celebrate that we got the bad guy, but where we got the bad guy is actually more scary than getting the bad guy to some extent. 1-800-684-3110 if you want to talk to us on air. Listen to this question. Jake Sullivan, National Security Advisor to President Biden, got Byte 29.
We just heard that al-Zawahiri was downtown Kabul with Taliban assistance. What does this say about the relationship between the Taliban and al-Qaeda?
Well, first, we do believe that senior members of the Haqqani network, which is associated with the Taliban, knew that Zawahiri was in Kabul. There may have been other members who didn't. And we are communicating directly with the Taliban about their obligations not to allow al-Qaeda to use Afghanistan as a basis for plotting.
So there you go. They know this, but they have obligations. Obligation. This is like, I don't know. It's like dealing with it. It's like making a deal with the devil. You can't. They don't meet their obligations. It's like Iran nuclear deal. But these are the same guys who want to go. It's Jake Sullivan. They want to rush back into the Iran nuclear deal. And we're going to let al-Qaeda know and the Taliban. You're not meeting your obligations since we evacuated from your country and abandoned Americans there and a lot of our allies there and Afghanis who have worked closely side by side with Americans for a decade. But by the way, because of their international obligations with the U.S., certainly we won't be able to, they won't become a safe haven for terrorists. It's a huge concern. Let me go to Steve in Oregon on line one. Hey, Steve.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call. Hey, it's really great that we took out this guy. Sure. And I know we're afraid of retaliation. I'll tell you exactly where it's going to come from, the Mexican border. They're already trying to get through. I mean, how many have they not caught?
Yeah, I mean, we hear about that all the time. We've actually got a FOIA on that because they had put up on their website that they had caught a couple of terrorists. They removed it down. It was DHS, Department of Homeland Security. We have, so we're in court over that. We're actively doing this work as we speak, specifically the withdrawal in Afghanistan. We have FOIAs on that. The removal of the announcement that there were terrorists captured at our southern border. And like you said, Z, how many are not encountered at the border? By the way, these guys, again, by look, appearance, if you got thousands of people coming across, and you're talking about Central America, they could blend right in if necessary. And it's so chaotic at the border. How many are already here? But what they always need is a place to plan, to really be able to put resources together. And that's what we now know Afghanistan has become. Unfortunately, we've learned that through what we can all celebrate is the killing of the head of Al-Qaeda, mastermind of 9/11. Wonderful. But what next when it's now a safe haven? He felt like he could be in the capital with a member of the Taliban cabinet. We'll be right back on Secular. To Secular. In this segment, I want to take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. There's a lot going on life, of course, in the post-Roe versus Wade world that we are all living in, especially in your states. Today alone, Kansas, the first time voters, not just legislators, but voters are going to the polls right now. ACLJ Action has been very active in Kansas with an advertising campaign, one involving a former congressman from Kansas, ACLJ senior counsel, Mike Pompeo, so well known there. We talked about him with that on broadcast yesterday. That ad is running in social media and on places like Google as well. We also have a late term abortion ad related to the Value Them Both Amendment, which people are voting on today in Kansas. Let me just remind you, if you're a Kansas voter, get out and vote yes. Vote yes on Value Them Both. If you have friends and family in Kansas, give them a call. Make sure they're getting out the vote. The polling has been, basically, it is a dead heat. It is tied. And this is going to be, for Kansas, and I think, you know, it sets the stage also for other states. You see who's energized, who's organized. But in Kansas, all this vote does, it's so interesting, it would reverse a state court ruling that Kansas has, that Kansans have a right to abortion. So they found that like in their state constitution, like the U.S. Supreme Court did under Roe, but that's gone now. So it reverses that, prevents mandatory state funding of abortion, and allows the state legislature to regulate abortion. So we stop paying for it, no mandating, no taxpayer-funded abortion in Kansas, and it allows the state legislature to even begin the restriction process. So this is a huge test because, again, it's not in a deep, deep, deep red state. It's not in a deep, deep blue state. It could go either way. It's also, again, there's other things going on voting-wise, but how much turnout will it drive? Just think about the numbers right now. As of Monday, 271,000 ballots have been cast. In 2018, so that would, again, in 2018, the last midterm there, non-presidential, there were 89,000 cast at this point. So you're talking almost 200,000 more early ballots already in. Unaffiliated, 40,000. Republicans, 122,000. Democrats, 106,000. Libertarians, 1,400 by voter registration. Now, again, this is by voter registration. Our ad has reached over 300,000 people just on Google alone, 70,000 with Mike Pompeo's ad, 85,000 so far on the late-term abortion ad. That is because of your financial support of ACLJ Action. Remember, it is a separate entity. While it's a sister organization, separate entity from the ACLJ. So it has its own staff. It does its own work, like the ads we're talking about. And in other states, which we'll update you on too on life, it won't just be, you know, ads. This was one that was happening very quickly. But lobbying, working directly with state legislatures. We're doing it right now in Indiana. Indiana, their pro-life legislation moved through the state Senate. We are working directly, both ACLJ attorneys and our ACLJ action team, on the actual legislation itself. So I want you to support the work of ACLJ Action. It costs $25 a year to be a member of ACLJ Action, so you can do that online at acljaction.org. Click there, and it'll, you can renew. It can auto-renew, but you can make a bigger donation than that. In fact, I want to let you know, because there's a contact section there. If you're someone working in your state on a pro-life legislation, you wanted ACLJ Action to come in and play a bigger role, and you've got the financial support for it, but you need the entity to do it, and you trust ACLJ and the work that we do and the expertise we bring, contact us there at, through acljaction.org, and we can, again, work together, because it's a different entity we've set up. It's really purposes, lobbying, legislation, advertising, and this is the first one we've engaged directly, but it certainly won't be the last, because coming up in November, you've got ballot initiatives in Maryland, Michigan, Kentucky, and Vermont. As I told you, we're working with Indiana legislators right now, and on in California, we are submitting language at a hearing, because the California bill that still has that perinatal language that would allow people to, it's not an abortion, because it'd be after birth, the killing of a child outside the womb for up to a month. We're going to submit our objection to that legislation and that language specifically used in California this week. So we are fighting up against, again, when it comes to this life issue, that's why I want to update you every few days, because it is, again, we have to take advantage. This was the opportunity you fought for decades with Roe versus Wade. We fought to take this out of federal courts and take the vote to the people. And we have the opportunity to do that. And at acljaction.org/abortion, we have this map. It's totally interactive. So you can check out your state and exactly know what's going on in your state right now. And I'll tell you about half the states of the country, it's active. More than that, even when you look at the map. Active in some states that are pro-abortion, active in some states that are going to be more pro-life. And then especially those states like in Kansas, it's all going to be about turnout today. If you're in Kansas, you get out and vote yes on the Value Them Both Amendment. You call your friends and family who may live in Kansas and tell them to get out and vote. At acljaction.org, we have a polling location finder. So if you're a Kansas voter, you can go to acljaction.org. Right on the homepage, you'll hear, see the Value Them Both Amendment. Click there, find your polling station. That, I mean, I would sound the alarms on this one. It is, the vote is happening today, and it will set the tone. So for all of us who are outside of Kansas, I know I'm talking to a lot more people than just Kansas, but for all of us who are outside of Kansas, this will set the tone for a lot of these votes. Will people be energized to get the votes in? So I think it's just important for everybody out there. We talked about this in a video I put together. I want to play it for people. And it's a video we put together about how interactive this fight is going to be. But go to acljaction.org, support our work there so we can do more lobbying on life, more advertising, put together a bigger team. But it'll all be based on your resources. So it's acljaction.org, where we're able to get more involved in the political process, the legislating and lobbying process in the good way. acljaction.org, $25 donation to become a member. I hope you will join today. But I want you to take a listen to this about this interactive map. It's so important because we were prepared for the post-Roe world. For decades, the ACLJ has battled tirelessly toward the goal of seeing the Supreme Court overturn Roe versus Wade. As steadfast defenders of the innocent unborn, we celebrated this historic victory at the Supreme Court. But now it's time to put the hammer down and dig even deeper, because our war at the state level has begun, and we want you to know that we're fully engaged. The ACLJ just launched a nationwide campaign to defeat abortion in all 50 states. In order for this to happen, you need to know exactly what's going on where you live. So part of our campaign includes a layout of abortion laws in each state at the time the Roe versus Wade decision came down. You can find this at our website, acljaction.org. And as you'll see, some states were prepared for Roe to fall and had already passed certain laws to protect the unborn. But others remain hostile to life and are moving to enshrine a right to abortion into their state constitution or state law. And this is exactly what we're prepared to take on. The breakdown of laws that we provided is a first step. When there's a fast-moving development regarding abortion, the ACLJ will be the first to know about it and will be ready. Right now, we're calling on states to enact robust protections for life and to vigorously oppose efforts to weaken those protections. This will not be easy, but neither was our last fight. And look how that turned out. When the ACLJ fights for life, we're always on the right side of history. We're in a matching challenge right now. That means all donations to the ACLJ will be matched, making your gift doubled. So go to ACLJ.org right now and join the fight. All right, folks, again, ACLJ.org/abortion. You can find that interactive map. Let me just go through this one more time because I think it's that important with Kansas. In Kansas, if you're a voter in Kansas, you got friends and family in Kansas, they need to get out and vote today. They have to vote, and it's clear, yes, on the value of them both amendment in Kansas. Yes, on that. I will tell you, this is still way too close to call. The numbers, just compared to the last midterm election, there are 200,000 more early votes already than the last time there was a midterm election in Kansas. There's a big unaffiliated number, 40,000. That's along with another 1,400 libertarians. Now, Republicans outnumber the Democrats, but with the unaffiliated, that becomes much more difficult to figure out. And that's just early vote. So same-day voting is going to be very important here. I hope that with that big victory of Roe versus Wade being overturned, that we can start with this first vote by the people in Kansas with yet another victory. And again, it is very simple what this does. It just allows the state legislature to put any restrictions on abortion. So it's not controversial. Anything else you're hearing about it is mis- and disinformation. And people need to get out to vote in Kansas today. Support the Value Them Both Amendment. Go to acljaction.org to find your polling place. We'll be right back on Seculo. All right, folks, welcome back to Seculo. So again, I encourage you, if you're in Kansas, make sure you get out and vote today for the Value Them Both. Vote yes. ACLJ Action, just to remind you of our work there, the ads that we've been running alongside with Secretary Pompeo, over 300,000 impressions on Google, over a couple hundred thousand through Facebook. And again, that's just targeted at Kansas voters because it's all about get out the vote. So I encourage you to do that. We'll report on the outcome of that tomorrow on this broadcast. Joined now by Jeff Balaban, senior counsel with the ACLJ, oversees our ACLJ Jerusalem office. And Jeff, really not always surprising to say this line, so more troubling, I guess I would say, information coming out of the UN. But this time, it's especially troubling because it's the chair of the UN investigation into alleged Israeli human rights crimes. Her colleague goes on social media does an interview and says that social media is controlled by the, quote, Jewish lobby. And that throws around, quote, a lot of money. So this would be her colleague that's also investigating Israel. Instead of distancing herself, removing that colleague, saying they should no longer be part of the investigation because of their bias, she's actually defending the colleague, Jeff.
That's right. You know, they are doubling down. First of all, both she and her colleague have a long and ugly history of anti-Semitism that comes out in treating Israel uniquely in the worst possible way, in ascribing all kinds of motives and actions to Israel that literally never took place, or describing them in the worst possible way for Israel and giving every other country a wash. So the classic anti-Semitic stuff. Now they've moved on to the classic anti-Semitic tropes, right? That when Jews, or anybody else that is, not just Jews, complain about their anti-Semitism, and in this case it was overtly anti-Semitic, by saying that anyone who complains, they're controlled by Jewish money or some cabal of Jewish power, the Jewish lobby, they call it now, right? By complaining that, they're the victims. Not only didn't she separate herself from it, not only didn't she condemn him or throw him off her commission, she actually doubled down on it. And she claimed that the predatory anti-Semites, she herself, by the way, and this person, are the victims, and they're the victims of this global international Jewish conspiracy.
Yeah, I mean, so that was her response back, was not that hey, this was wrong, or but that deliberately the Jewish media and these social media outlets are in fact trying to misstate and misquote. But we know, Jeff, the animosity there towards Israel is real. And I think what this animosity shows is it's a second animosity. They try to get away with saying, oh, it's about Israel, not Jews. This is what reminds people that it's about Jews.
That's exactly right, Jordan. It's very important. You know, for literally centuries, actually, we could say for millennia, people don't get up and say, I hate Jews, therefore I want to expel them or kill them. They give a reason. There's an excuse for it. Oh, the Jews are, you know, in Hitler's famous words, the Jews are our misfortune, right? There's always an excuse. There's always a reason. Well, now the reason is, you know, it's that pesky Jewish state and that Jewish lobby that allows them to do all kinds of terrible things. And yes, once in a while, the quote anti-Israel stuff comes through and they say it's really not about Israel. It's really not about Zionism. It's just Jew hatred. This is an example of classic Jew hatred.
Yeah, I mean, so this to me, I mean, shows it kind of, I mean, it, to me, Jeff, we are active there at the UN through our status there, the European Center for Law and Justice, to expose just this and to fight back. I mean, and it's important for our, because I think that people listen to say, well, why do we want to have anything to do with this international body? But unfortunately, if we don't engage directly with it, this is becomes a very mainstream world, worldwide thinking, which can become very dangerous. This is not the outliers at the UN. This is mainstream.
100%. And I'm going to look at this other screen I have here because, Jordan, you mentioned our role as an NGO at the UN. Well, let me tell you, the quote actually by this individual is that they're disheartened by the social media, whether controlled by, quote, the Jewish lobby or specific NGOs. Meaning, yes, the work that we're doing at the UN is having an impact by calling out their anti-Semitism, by standing up for the rights of Jews and the rights of Israel. We are having an impact, and it's bothering them. So what do? They blame Jewish control and Jewish power.
You know, we're going to fight back against this, utilizing our efforts at the UN, utilizing our ability to work. I wanted, Jeff, just because I think it'd be interesting for our audience, too. Where do things kind of, you just got back from, I know you're back, traveling back and forth between Israel and the U.S., but where are things kind of standing right now politically there in Israel? I think people, our audience, of course, they're very familiar with Netanyahu, and they kind of like to know, you know, what's going on.
Well, I actually just yesterday spoke with someone who is deeply, deeply engaged more in the on the Likud side, just to get a sense. I talked to a variety of the parties and individuals to get their feeling, and they're feeling very optimistic. They are feeling very optimistic, and that's what I'm hearing in general, that there's a strong sense that Netanyahu will be able to forge a coalition. The ads in Hebrew on social media and elsewhere are basically saying it's a clear choice. The last government, the one they just had, was rooted in bringing in certain parties. I mean, listen, there have been Arab members of Knesset belonging to parties in a governing coalition is not new. But this time they brought in a party that is actually a Muslim Brotherhood-linked party. And Netanyahu is directly running against that. And I think a lot of people in Israel who previously might have not I thought maybe it's time for a change, wanted to change back to a Netanyahu-led coalition.
So that coalition, Jeff, just final question to you. Can he do that without going through another election process, or would there be another election process to get to that point?
As of now, it's another election process. I haven't heard a discussion about there not being another election. It is another election is what seems to be indicated. And but as I say, as it seems now, just listen, it's like in American politics, a week, let alone a month or a couple of months, is a very, very long time. But the general sense now is that that Netanyahu could probably lead a coalition.
That again, that those elections that look like they'll be in November. Jeff, as always, we appreciate you joining us on the broadcast. Folks, let me, again, you kind of saw our reach today. Jeff, who oversees our office in Israel, Rick Rennell directly responding to the CIA taking out al-Zahiri, which is great, but it's a lot scarier because of where he was and what it kind of shows about Afghanistan and what the Biden administration has gotten wrong about the Taliban, which is that they are providing obviously a direct safe haven for the world's worst terrorists, especially those who want to take out Americans. And of course, tomorrow in Kansas, our work for life. Let me encourage you, support the work at ACLJ Action, brand new entity. I know you've learned about our launch, But I think it's just very cool that we can point out through you just what we've done in Kansas because of having this new entity. And we were able to do that because of those initial donors who came out when we launched ACLJ Action and said, I want to stand up. I want to join ACLJ Action. I want to be part of that hammer. I want to get that next level of involvement. You can actually become a member of ACLJ Action, and it's officially $25 to join. You go to acljaction.org. But I encourage you to do that because we got so many fights coming up for life where we want to engage, run the ad campaigns, get out the vote, work with the legislators like we're doing in Indiana, work against bad legislation like we're doing in California, engage lobbyists when we need to, run ad campaigns when we need to. We know we're great at doing it. But here's the part where you come into ACLJ Action. It is really the amount of work we do through ACLJ Action, the amount of ads that run, the amount of lobbying we can do is dependent on the resources we have available. And it is separate from the ACLJ. So I encourage you, go to acljaction.org, donate today, become a member. If you got the resources, $25 a year, become a member of ACLJ Action. Donate today, support our work, get out the vote in Kansas, vote yes.